Rooster Teeth production.
To the only podcast proving the DEI ruins companies. It's the RT Podcast. Oh, man. For one final time, I am your host, Armando Torres, and joining me, as always, is...
as never again, is Andrew Rosas. Hello.
And...
apparently, not good things also come to an end.
Truly proving the age-old sentiment that all things must come to an end.
Yeah. Good or bad. Value neutral. They come to an end.
Yeah, we did it. This is the last one.
Yeah. The last episode, not just of like our hosting this show, of RTP.
Yeah.
This is the last one. They, for some reason, let us have this one. I don't know why, but you know.
This is a truly wild choice, but you know what? We're here. We're queer.
And that's, what brought down the
crazy, crazy camera switch to Griff in that moment.
He's also queer.
Yeah, not as much as you.
I'd say more.
Just per square mile.
In surface area.
In surface area.
Volume-wise, I can reach so much more
queer in you.
Oh, queer, yeah. That's what it is. Why did they not pick up 12 more seasons of this?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I just love, you know, we had the show for like, about a year. I feel like our first episode was almost a year ago, which is wild to think about. But, you know, I'm going to be a little bit serious here. I know this is like a comedy show and whatnot. Or, you know, the comments don't think so. But anyway, I know this is a comedy show and whatnot, but like, you know, I've been here for 6 years, almost 7 years, and this was the most fun I had at this company.
Even when
I was in core and we were doing like sketches every week, that was fun and that was cool and that was like production. But truly doing this show with my best friends was the best time I had here in this whole damn company, the whole time I was here. So I love you guys.
Yeah.
I really appreciate the last year we've had here. Oh wow! I didn't think I was gonna get emotional. Like I just got a little misty.
A little misty.
My favorite was last laugh.
Yeah.
Because I won that. You're like, I won that.
I did not win that, and I did not like it. I should clarify. I liked the show. I did not like making the show because it is an ancient torture device of making people bomb for 12 hours and then hate yourself.
No, I mean, I am so glad I didn't have to do that show because some people that were on that show are just funny people, not comedians. And then there were people like you who are comedians and like a very specific like section of hell that is going to just bomb for 15 hours a day. Like,
it's truly a terrible feeling, but you're right. This has been my favorite. I think that, do you guys know what my anniversary date is? The day that I got hired?
What?
It's 420, dude. My first day of work is 4:20.
Says on your severance package that you found out.
My severance papers are actually just a pack of raws, dude. Sick of
that. They mail it to you, but you can't use it to smoke.
Yeah, the envelope says for tobacco use only. So coming up is I think my third year here. I don't know how long I've worked here. I think it's been three. You've been here for...
according to my severance paperwork, it'll be 6.4 years.
Whoa!
Yeah.
God damn.
We almost got hired at the same time.
Yeah, I'm like in the middle of the seventh, would have been the seventh year.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm approaching year four. I don't know. I'll check my LinkedIn after this. So how did you start working here?
Oh man, I feel like I've told this before. I used to work at Adult Swim, and we were doing for the marketing team, and we did an activation on the RTX main stage in like 2017, I think. And then AT&T bought Turner, and they had a hiring freeze, and I lost my job because I was like part time. It was like one step above an intern, below a coordinator to train you to be a coordinator. And then they were like, well, we're not hiring because we can't hire because AT&T said no. So I said, what was that fucking place I went to in Texas? I'm not going to live in Texas. And I'm going to apply anyway. And then now I'm here for 7 years.
You were living in Georgia?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And okay. I was like, what was that place I went to that convention? They seem pretty cool. I guess I'll apply there.
And then you started working for our sales team, right?
Yeah. And now I'm here.
Not for very long. This is, what do we got, Tyler? 2 weeks?
38 days?
38 days? For 38 days from this recording.
Jesus. I thought it was 15 minutes, really, honestly. They've got a timer set up back there, and I don't know what happens when it goes off.
Yeah, when it goes to zero, fuck.
But, yeah.
I think what's really interesting about your story is that you have every funny guy in the office dream job of being such a funny guy in the office. They go, we're calling you up to the major.
That's literally kind of basically what happened. I just kept telling enough jokes, and they were like, do you want to do it here? And I was like, okay. But I guess that also means I was probably bad at my other job.
No, I think you're good at your job.
I was fine at my job.
I think you're good at your
job. I was good at the parts of my job I liked.
I think that's everybody. Yeah. Yeah, one time
I don't know that that's exclusive to just you. I think that's like, a universal human trait.
Because I was the idea and the pitching and the writing it, but then when it was like, can you do this spreadsheet? I was like, what if I killed myself?
Okay, yeah, I don't know that it's universal, but it's definitely universal within this podcast.
Sure.
Of we exude heavy ADHD student energy.
Yeah, we start so strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Coming out the gate, strong.
Constantly scared that every manager I've ever had is going to call my mom and go, I really like him, but he's not applying himself.
Same. That's just the annual review cycle.
But he should be applying himself to other jobs because he's fine.
Because he is canned. What was your first production that you ever worked on?
Like in sales or non-sales?
Non-sales, like as an on-camera.
I think it was Last Laugh too.
I thought so also, yeah.
Which is an insane thing to have put me in.
Well, wait, I don't think it's that crazy. I mean, it's... First of all, they need bodies.
They do need bodies.
They needed bodies.
They need soldiers to run at the gunfire.
I was definitely running at the gunfire because I got out first.
Yeah, you were first off the boat at Normandy
Beach.
Out. Yeah,
and I knew that was gonna happen.
No!
Yeah. Not even. I'm just the guy who's trying to lower the fucking thing so everyone else can run down. So,
you're not even a soldier. Even you just work on the boat. Yeah. Oh my God! So last
boat captain who didn't know that's where they were going. Wait, what?
Fuck!
Is that Normandy Beach? Oh, those are fucking Nazis. Those are Nazis. What are we doing here?
Oh, normally I just do tours.
Yeah, sorry,
but I guess so are you now.
Stupid.
Terrible.
Mm. Wordplay, we love it. Man, first production being. Last Laugh, what a crazy trial by fire kind of way to get in there. And then you joined STF.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. When I was talking about what I was gonna do, it was either join STF or see if I could get in with Funhouse.
That would have been the move.
Yeah. But I didn't do that. I did STF instead. Mm. But you know, to a lesser extent, maybe that was the right move.
That's fair.
Because we had a lot of fun. We did so much cool stuff.
You guys did do cool stuff. It was a lot of fun. It was such an awesome thing to witness.
That TikTok loved us.
TikTok loved you.
TikTok loved us.
Yeah. And that was your stated goal with STF.
Was to make a vertical comedy content group for a new audience who was unfamiliar with Rooster Teeth.
But like so many, and maybe this is the root of a lot of, not just Rooster Teeth problems, but media in general. And I'm going to let you guys in on hearing a little secret here. Mm. Being really popular on a platform, a lot of people think being really popular on a platform plus question mark equals money.
Nope.
No one knows what that question
mark is. No one knows what it is.
No one knows how to convert a lot of views and stuff like this into money.
Yeah.
But not just like money. It can be money for you.
Yeah.
Money for you.
Yeah.
Money for a company, no.
I truly don't believe that it works that way, and it's why... I mean, holy shit, the hypocrisy here in the statement I'm about to make is crazy. But I think that staying as independent as possible when creating, like, you know, a sort of, like, channel or company is the way to do it with Cult Podcast, the show that I, you know, that I did here. Okay. And I've talked about the story before, but basically I did Cult Podcast. We got picked up by The Roost, weirdly, because one of Paige's coworkers knew a member of The Roost, like their exec team or whatever, and said, "Hey, my coworker has a podcast." And this person went, "Everyone has a podcast, but you're my friend, so I'll listen to your coworker's podcast or whatever." Mm-hmm. And then I was like, "Oh, this is pretty good." Got us on The Roost. They were like, "Your numbers aren't very good.
Yeah.
So let's get you on some Rooster Teeth stuff to sort of, you know, like work with people." And that's how I met like Blaine and Chris. And then they just liked working with me and kept saying, "Oh, you should work with this person and this person and this person." And then eventually Omar at Funhouse was like, "You just want to work here?" And I was like, "Yeah. I am so sick and tired of making podcasts, and all I want to do is make really fun content." And Omar said, "That's great. I've got the perfect job for you, running the Funhouse podcast."
And you said, "But I get to do other stuff, right?" And he said,
We'll let you do whatever anyone else doesn't want to do. The Funhouse podcast, Google Trends, thumbnails.
Hey, everyone in Funhouse did thumbnails.
It didn't feel like it at the end. I got to work at Funhouse, which was just awesome. Just such a great experience because they're all fucking, hilarious. They're all sick. And I'm pretty sure that when they were forming STF, because that was around the time that I started working here, I think that I took your open position over at Funhouse.
Oh, I should have killed you.
We should have. Yeah, we should be enemies.
We should have fought, and we should be enemies.
To the death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like this, friends to enemies. This is how we go out in the last episode.
Friends to enemies arc is
crazy. I'm cracking a pool cue and putting it on the ground here the last 5 minutes of the show, so.
Yeah,
enjoy
I'm
that.
Putting up, you know what?
Viewers only.
What if we do this? All three of us put up our severances right now in a pot. The three of us battle to the death.
Battle to the death, get all of it.
Physical fight.
I was going to say, like pistols at dawn or like weaponry?
No. I'm talking, hold on, let me get real big. Yeah, see that? I sit up and I'm out of frame. No. I'm slouching back down. You're okay. Physical fight.
Oh, here's the thing. Mondo would probably win because of just size, brute strength. Now, the way he wouldn't win, the only way I could see like either of us coming out on top is just tiring him.
Yeah, endurance, for
going
sure.
Endurance.
Everyone always says this. Yeah, you might be strong, but I've got the endurance. I don't need endurance. I'll stand in the center of the ring until you come to me,
and then
I'll go fucking the... I'll become the monkey from Nope and just fucking beat the shit out of you on the set.
I was thinking the Godzilla King Kong movie where he picks up the one monkey
and hits him with the other monkey. Beats the shit out of... God. I am realizing that I spiritually am just big monkey. That's what I've always been.
Big monkey.
Big monkey.
Big monkey.
Big monkey like banana.
I don't like banana.
You
don't like banana.
Andrew, how did you start working here?
I think we talked about this briefly when we just like aired all our grievances in the last episode. But I wrote a pilot, a sitcom pilot, and
and Gus heard pilot? And hired you on the spot.
Exactly. No, I wrote a sitcom pilot that I gave to a few friends to like read, and they really and a couple of them really liked it. And then one of my friends, Owen Edgerton, was working here on a couple of he was working with Rooster Teeth on a couple of projects, and he knew a couple of the producers, and he was like, "I really like this. Do you mind if I send it to somebody over at Rooster Teeth? Because they're looking for someone to come in and rewrite all of Laser Team 2 on the while they're filming it, like literally on the set on the day." And I was like, "Yeah, I can totally do it." Just say, by the way, this is an important like career tip for all you kids out there who want to like get into like the business or, and really anything. At some point, you're going to be asked to do something you don't know how to do, and you're just going to have to say yes, because like I got asked to like rewrite a script on the set. I've never done that before. And I just said, yeah, I can do it. And then you just have to kind of fake it till you make it. But it worked out great. It's how I got a job here.
That's just life.
So that's just life. So that's take some professional advice. Do not let your fear of not being able to actually know how to do something get in the way of like actually saying yes to an opportunity and figuring it out as you go. Because we're all freestyling. Yeah. This is bebopping and scatting constantly.
I feel like everything we've ever done here has been like, I don't know how to direct a thing. I guess I'll do it. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we gotta. Somebody's gotta.
Who wants to do it?
Shit. I also remembered, by the way, not to cut you off, but I remembered what I was saying earlier about being independent. Is when we did Cold Podcasts, similar to what you were saying, at a certain point, we had to start an LLC, which meant that Armando had to start an LLC. I'm the president of a company. And I had to, I had to go talk to an accountant, and he would say stuff like, okay, so what's your like average employee base? And I was like from the tip to the base? it's mostly just me, so... and then he didn't like that answer. So I had to go to a different accountant. Mm. And
he said, Robert told me about you.
You're the dick guy. So I had to start a company. I had to set up a Patreon. I had to do all of that stuff. And what I found is that it's extremely lucrative when there's two of you. The moment you start hiring people, it becomes a fucking nightmare. Oof. When it was just Paige and I starting a Patreon and I was shipping all of those shirts and shit out of my then girlfriend's apartment, it was so much more lucrative. You know, it was we were able to live. I was able to pay my rent. I didn't have anything to like focus on or whatever. And then the operation started growing and we started touring and I started working here at Rooster Teeth. So I had like less time and I had to start hiring employees. And then it was like, oh fuck, we can't scale. This can't scale. This is so impossible unless it becomes a full-time job. And the way that it scales is I just lose out so much of my time. That realization that like, it's really hard to make any of those big numbers make any kind of money for you unless it's a very independent operation, which sucks.
This last episode, we've chosen to make a business chat podcast. trying to coach you and all. Learn the error of our ways.
Yeah.
Don't get into this business. It's horrible. it's nothing but wall-to-wall heartbreak everywhere you go.
No, it's like, I think that being in the entertainment industry is a lot like slacklining, where you never have sure footing, but the moments that you do feel stable are really fun.
Yeah, and then if you fail, you'll fucking die.
Yeah. What is not correct about this metaphor?
You know what? Yeah, that's actually a very fair comparison to the thing that we've chosen to do. There's also nothing I'd rather do. And also, I would not have changed the choices that we made working here for the world.
No.
One of my favorite parts about working here was meeting you
guys. That we made.
Yeah.
The choices that we made. Yeah.
I would have changed a lot of choices.
Things.
If I had a time machine, immediately first of all, killing Hitler. Then after that, with the blood still on me, I'm grabbing Gus and I'm going, don't take the full screen money. And then maybe a couple other choices as well.
Two Hitler bloodied handprints on the lapels.
Don't take the full screen money.
On Gus's lapels.
Well, full screen's insane. How I got here.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'm going back again. Again, still covered in the Hitler blood. I'm not taking a shower. And I'm grabbing him again and going, do take the screen money. But I'm changing outfits so that it's more confusing for him.
As if he came from another alternate future where he didn't take the full screen money and it was way worse.
I truly...
Yeah, it's Hell Valley in fucking Back to the Future 2.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. I know in this hypothetical situation we've created, I like that Gus doesn't know why I have blood on me. But both times I come there covered in someone else's blood.
Or who the fuck you are. He doesn't know.
What if he just like, was that an older me?
No, come on. That's not fair. When Gus was my age, he looked 40. That's not fair.
so fucking funny.
Was that my son?
Maybe. Actually, yeah. I could be Gus's son.
Yeah, you're about the right height.
Man, I feel like, I don't know if we've talked about it on the show before. I feel like we have to have. Is that Andrew and I were planning on making a biopic of Rooster Teeth.
Yeah.
The Rooster Teeth biopic.
Oh, yeah, I remember when we pitched that.
Yeah, we were going to, the way that we were going to make it work financially was we were doing those cold opens, sketches that we started doing.
Yeah.
That,
when they let us have fun.
Man, I don't know if we ever even talked about this. We pitched the fact that we would do a cold open sketch every once in a while.
Oh, yeah.
We were like, yeah, we'll do this like on special occasions. Once in a blue moon when we have something. Because we filmed that first sketch, the Goodfellas sketch, and we were like, it's fun. It's just like a fun little thing that we do. What?
We pitched it that way, and then much like Michael Jackson in the Thriller music video, you look directly at the camera with yellow demon eyes in a freeze frame.
Yeah, I'm not gonna waste our fucking budget. Yeah, and then we fucking did it every week. Yeah. We did it every week. And they never told me to stay. They never said anything. Well, I didn't think they knew we were doing it.
They didn't.
Yeah, they did.
They didn't know we were doing it.
Because we would take an extremely low budget, mostly the cost of just like paying people to work on it, honestly. Yeah. Andrew and I would write a script every single week. And then myself or Drew would direct. Mm-hmm. And then I would edit for like 17 hours or something. Not straight, like a little gay. And then I would, we would put it together and put it out, and somehow it would work. And it was, God, how many cold opens did we make?
Like 10?
10, maybe?
It was so gratifying.
It was. It was the best feeling. When we took over RTP and we were doing that, it was the fact that we were making what we had called the Dana Carvey Show, which, you know, is a very real show that if you're a fan of this show, you would probably like. It was Dana Carvey was given a TV show where he was able to do sketches and weird shit. And it was very funny. And the writer's room was packed with some of the funniest comedians ever.
Maybe one of the most stacked writer's rooms in all of history.
Yeah.
Like, everybody was in the Dana Carvey writers. Everybody you know, like funny people, not just funny writers, but funny people you know now famously were in that writer.
Like, I think like Colbert was like the shit bag of the writers.
Right,
they
yeah.
were like, fuck this new kid or whatever.
Yeah.
It was very funny, but it did not resonate with the right audience. It's a huge hit now. I think Hulu made a documentary on it called Too Funny to Fail.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, that's what we decided to make, a show that we were proud of, that we thought was really funny, to make it for as long as we wanted, and we were making the cold opens. Man, that schedule was fucking insane, because basically, on Wednesday, we would have a writer's room, we would come up with a cold open idea, and we would come up with a segment idea, and we would...
A game,
and like...
Or the cares.
Topics to talk about.
Yeah.
We'd come up with all this stuff. And then from Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, we would have to write everything. We would write the game segment. We would write the cold open sketch.
Do our other jobs, because we were still in pro dev at that point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We were also like making decks, making pitches, meeting. Like,
A lot of meetings. A lot of meetings that I felt like I didn't need to be in.
So mostly we didn't.
I bet if you took a survey of any company, not even just this one, I bet if you took a survey of any company and you asked everyone, up to the CEO, down to the person in their mailroom who attend 15 meetings a week, what percentage of meetings do you feel like you absolutely have to be at? Every single one would say 10 to 15% only. Yeah.
The amount
and just for 10 minutes, all working
at a job is going to fucking meetings. It's insane.
Most of it.
It's insane.
A majority of meetings I feel like could have been an email, and a majority of emails I feel like could have been a Slack message.
Yeah.
And a Slack message could have been an emoji, which is just
salute emoji. Yeah. God, the amount of times that we sent that out. Yeah, so we would be doing our regular jobs and fucking hustling from Wednesday to Friday to get this shit ready, get the shot list together, hand it over to everyone. Basically, also our production crew a glorious gang of troops that were ready at any time to do the thing we wanted
to
do.
Better than the troops, as far as I'm
concerned. A truly painful experience, and I appreciate them so much, because we would basically on Friday hand them our nutso script and shot list and go, get ready, it's gonna be hell.
And there's a ton of guns.
And there's always guns.
Always a gun.
There's always a weapon of some kind.
Look, we got Cameron out there looking wistfully.
Oh, those were the salad days.
Oh man.
Incredible days. Yeah, we would do that. Monday, we would make sure that everything was ready. And then Tuesday, we would film everything.
Yep.
And then that's when the cycle really started, because immediately after that, we needed to do notes. We needed to do cut downs. Yep. And then I needed to edit this sketch. And then it became just like, my entire waking hours, all of them, became making that show.
Yeah.
And I know this makes it sound like I'm about to talk about like crunch culture or something. I've never been happier.
Yeah.
It was the happiest I had ever been. And I really enjoyed making those things.
Yeah, you know, when you're making stuff that you like, you feel like you have purpose, and purpose is the juice, man.
Yeah.
So like, you feel like we're working something, making like really good. And honestly, like, yeah, like those first few months of doing the show, when we were making the cold opens and doing the podcast and stuff like that, and when we still had the company's attention, because they lost interest in us pretty fast after that.
Well, they had the baby.
They had the shiny new toys to play with.
That's what always happens.
But I mean that's anywhere. But yeah, like that time was hectic and crazy, and the hour, and you know, everyone was killing. I wasn't. I was doing shit. No, I was writing.
Shut up.
But everyone was like working really hard, and we were making this thing that, like, here's the best part. Here's the thing that like kills me though, is that it isn't even, like, because when we were approached to do this show, we were like, okay, can we do it our way, which is this. We did not get that at all.
No.
What we made was a compromise, and it was still a fucking blast.
Yeah.
Because these people are a blast, and this crew, everyone who works here, is a fucking blast. So I'm just saying, like, as amazing and fun as doing the cold opens and like the show that we were kind of like corralled into was, not corralled, that sounds bad, but like the show that we ended up making was such a blast. I can't even imagine how cool it would have been to do what we had planned.
Because what we had planned was a series of shows.
Yeah.
Both, some of them scripted, some of them unscripted.
Yeah.
Just random shit that we wanted to make. And they said, oh, this would work really great as a podcast segment. And we went, I don't know that that's a good idea. And then we would keep going like, I don't think that's gonna work. I don't think that's how the market works. And they went, trust me, I know how the market works. I made Red versus Blue.
Yeah.
I thought you were gonna say, I don't listen to podcasts.
Both true. Yeah.
Smash cut to 3 weeks ago.
I for one am buying the Blu-ray.
I know how to run a bit out of business. Well, that's the end of me. So I don't know. The pitch was like, because so a lot of the things that you saw us do on this show, like Bottoms Up or like It's a Choice and stuff like that, I feel like, you know, they started out as their, well, they, you know, that came from STF, but like, I feel like a lot of the segments that you saw, a lot of bits that you saw on the show were part of bigger, I'll say better, ideas that would have existed as their own sort of like
little thing
with underneath kind of the RTP banner.
Yeah.
But
how is this news was a show that you, myself, Griff, really, and Brian Garr and Christian Young, we were all working on. And that just got lost in weird development hell.
And so we took it back and said, we're going to make it a podcast segment.
Yeah. And it was really fun. And it was like, it was not what it was intended to be, if that makes sense. Like, it never.
How was this news supposed to be like a 25 to 33 minute standalone?
Yeah. Wait, don't tell me, without a liberal arts degree.
Yeah.
It was scumbag NPR.
Wait, don't tell me that, like, you know, never mind.
Wait, don't tell me what you think you're better than me?
Yeah, what you think you're better than me?
Wait, don't tell me because I don't want to fucking hear it.
Had enough. Yeah, it was, yeah, NPR, but with, like, yeah, a backpack, not a tote bag. You know what I mean? Like, it had, like...
NPR with fanny pack, but not the cool kind. Or not the, or, but
the leather kind.
But the cool kind, not the one that they sell.
We can say just a bag with drugs in it. Yeah. That's it. Go. That's what we're getting at.
Yeah.
A bomb bag.
It's NPR with a lot more mushrooms in it.
Yeah. But so that's, yeah, How Is This News was going to be, would be that. And man, yeah, there's a few things. We can just like reminisce about the projects that never went through the pipeline.
Yeah.
That was one of them. That would have been a really cool show. The thing about that, though, is, and this is the problem that, you know, toward the end in the last like couple of years, I think this is not exclusive to us, like literally the whole company and everybody like working here ran into is just like, it takes so much to make a show.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not just saying like money, but like time. And then for, you know, for a place like this, like time, it is money. Like, you know, people are like a lot of contract employees we work for us. And like, so like, you know, editors have to be hired and other support staff has to be like hired, and that kind of stuff adds up. So to do like, you know, a show like How Is This News on the cheap requires like, cause like for like, say, Wait, Don't Tell Me, there's a staff of people working on that, writers, contributing writers, researchers.
There's
they have
like a whole like newspaper news network funding it.
Yeah, exactly. There's a whole mechanism involved in order to make this very kind of pleasant, ostensibly deceptively easy to make show, because there's so many things going on behind the scenes. And so that, you know, I think so many great ideas, not just from this show, but from like other departments, you know, other brands can't even like attempt to reach escape velocity, because it's like, oh yeah, you can totally do that. If you and the three other people on this show want to work 20 hours a day, like.
And sometimes you're just worth it.
Yeah, because your time is, my time means nothing to me unless I'm spending it making something.
Right, yeah.
Also,
yeah.
I don't know, one of the other things that makes everything really complicated, I want to be clear, I'm going to say something, and I need you to know that I'm not super, like, just hear me out, is I guess what I'm saying.
Okay.
Because we work for a business, the business's bottom line is its bottom line. It needs to make money. It needs to be profitable. It's hard for a business to justify taking risks. Understand that we work for an entertainment company. And so obviously as entertainers and as artists, we, in our brains, it's always the most worth it for us to make the best thing. Like, obviously, that's what we always want to make. We want to take big swings, do big shit. I don't give a fuck about a budget. You give me a small budget, big budget, as long as you give me full creative control, we'll make it happen.
Yeah.
But it's hard, especially, to argue that to people whose entire purpose is to keep the lights on and keep everything in business and keep people employed for as long as possible, because that's obviously what a business wants to do. One of the things that sucked a lot was watching people have great ideas that they're super excited about and just not get to make them because they are too big of a risk.
Yeah.
And you saw it with stuff like, you know, Good Morning, Good News, I almost said Good Morning from Ratman. Good News Ratman, or
Good Morning
like,
from Hell.
Well, Good Morning from Hell.
Is that what you were thinking about? Or
no. Oh, okay. I was thinking of Good News Ratman.
Good News Ratman.
Because that was a show that Gus was super excited about, that you were writing for and Elise was writing for, and like everyone was super stoked on it. And then they were basically told like, well, the only way to make this work is if you get these like insane metrics that no show would be able to hit.
That's
you
need to hit them immediately.
Episode. It's you need to have, your first episode needs to have 20,000 downloads. It's like, are you insane? Like, unless you are Jeff, like you don't get, you know, us folks don't get those numbers. That's crazy. And so, it was, you were just so many things just suffocated in the crib.
Yeah.
Because there's just like, that was just an impossible metric and hurdle to get up for, like, because again, I said this at the beginning, like, weirdly, a lot of views, downloads, listens, does plus question mark does not equal enough money to lit to a company. No. Yeah. Like the overhead, the lights, this building. Yeah. Like that's not, it's enough for individual creators sometimes.
We've also been talking with people about like advertising shit, because advertising shit gets weird and people don't understand it. And there's a part of advertising where like, I mean, you're probably very familiar with it, but selling ad reads on podcasts and stuff does not necessarily mean that you get all of that money, because sometimes they don't have the budget for it. So they'll say, we're buying at 11K.
Yeah.
So like, I'm buying 11K of your downloads, which means that I only get paid for those 11,000 downloads out of, you know,
however many you have.
Yeah. So like, it also
an insane thing.
Yeah, I hate it so much, because then it's like, okay, cool, well, I'm glad I'm spending 25 seconds or whatever doing this thing that I only get paid for like 10% of what I'm, whatever.
Of course,
yeah.
It doesn't matter. The point of what I'm saying is that, yeah, I'm so excited to see what everyone does here next, because of the fact that so many people have such great ideas. I talked with Trevor recently about like the stuff that, you know, he's thinking about doing. It's actually been really interesting here the last couple of days, because you'll hear people talk with stuff. Like I when we were doing the live stream a while ago, on the 21st birthday live stream, I talked with Blaine and Chris, and they were like, yeah, we've been talking to, you know, some of our film friends, because they're, you know, like, they've been making, like, features and stuff. And I'm thinking, like, maybe it's time for us to make a feature, you know, like, maybe that's the way to get into it. And I'm like, yeah, buddy, that's a way to make money in the future. A feature film. The thing everyone's always made profit on.
Those are really good.
The surest bet in the industry.
Yeah. But also, like, I don't care about money. And I think that I want to see whatever movie those two cook up.
Because it would be awesome. Blaine pitched me a movie he wants to make. And I get mad sometimes because I can't watch it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I'll just remember what he pitched me as a memory, and I'm like, I should go watch that. Oh, I can't. It's not made yet. I'm gonna fucking kill him. Like
that is the mark of such a great idea, and one that I've basically like, okay, so many times working here, somebody working here will pitch me an idea that I'm like, holy shit, I really want to watch that show. Like, I want to watch that so bad. That is the mark of a good show, is when you're like, fuck, I don't want to make it. I just want to watch it. Why isn't this done already? Why isn't somebody else made it already?
Yeah, it's tough. And you know, like, I mean, that's, again, that's a thing that's not just like exclusive to this company, but I feel like, you know, that's kind of like entertainment industry at large, is like most things and most good things do not get made. The amount of amazing scripts, awesome ideas, fantastic things that don't even get to pilot is a pile that could reach the fucking moon.
Yeah, Tarantino has a Star Trek script.
That's crazy.
Like, you guys know that, right? Like, he was like, Tarantino was like, I want to make a Star Trek movie. I have a script for it and everything. And they're never gonna let him make that. Why would they?
No, not in a million. Not a million years.
But I want it.
But I want to see it.
I want to see Spock drop the N-word so many times. I want to see that movie.
Hand me my phaser. Which one? The one that says bad motherfucker. Yeah.
William Shatner's going to get bitch slapped for sure.
Folks. Yeah, I'm sad I'm not going to be able to make those kind of stupid, dumbass jokes anymore on this stupid, dumbass show. We'll get to make them in person. You just won't get them. I'll call Mondo at 3 in the morning in a cold sweat and think with some clever joke from hours later.
Yeah, but everyone's going to be like, that's the thing, right? Everyone's working on stuff. Everyone's making stuff. And I'm sure come May 10th, you'll hear a lot of things coming out.
I'd say the 12th. But
maybe the 12th.
Maybe, I don't know. You know, not to be one of those watch this space people, but
not to be one of those SoundCloud boyfriends, but big things coming up.
Not in this context will we be able to make stupid jokes again. But sorry to go back to like the ideas, like the cool ideas and stuff that came out of this place. That is like maybe one of the that is the sadness, but because it was so great, part of like Rooster Teeth ending is that like, just like walking through these halls, you could bump into almost anyone with like a good idea, and like that's like incredibly rarefied air.
Yeah,
and that's like a really, I think that's like a really, you know, amazing and special thing.
God.
And
the other day, sorry, I didn't mean.
Oh no, it's great. Go ahead.
I just the other day, Neil pitched me one of the funniest sketches I'd ever heard. This was during the Super Bowl, where basically. Artie, our mascot, wanted to start his own version of the Puppy Bowl. And so he started the Rooster Bowl, which was basically a halftime show where they took a bunch of roosters and put them into a ring together, and then they just did what they were gonna do. And it was the Rooster Teeth made a cockfighting ring.
We backdoored into, like, that's amazing.
And it was such a funny sketch, and I was just like, that fucking rocks, dude. That's awesome. I love that so much. Yeah, there's so many people here that have just, like, fucking incredible ideas. Oh, man.
So one of the, we played on the, yesterday was the live stream. This is coming out later. Yesterday was the live stream for the 21st anniversary, and we played Bottoms Up. And one of the cards questions that I had contemplated writing was, what's an idea or project that you had that you didn't bring to Rooster Teeth because you knew they would fuck it up?
Now, here's the bad part, is that once you say it, it is technically the IP property of
That's
the intellectual
why I
property
cut the question, because like you couldn't
Warner
answer
Brothers.
That honestly.
So
you couldn't
funny.
Answer that honestly without a claim.
Yeah.
Because like, that, and you know, again, this company offered, I think everyone here, some incredible opportunities, and to have like a full-time salaried benefited position in the entertainment industry
insane.
Is almost unheard of.
Now
almost
we know why.
Unheard of, and now we know why, because it's not heard of anymore.
I should say that we are very appreciative of Rooster Teeth and everything that they've given
100%,
us. 100%.
That's not. Yeah. This is not a dig on that. It is more of an indictment of the industry and of a thing which, again, at the bottom line, has to make money.
Make money always.
Yeah. And
even if it's just meant to, you know, be a fun little goof 'em up time.
And like the thing. Okay. How honest can I be?
As honest as you want, we can always cut it out.
We can always cut it out. Okay, so.
Looking at Tyler's eyebrows to see
looking
where
at,
we're
I'm looking
at.
I'm looking at your eyebrows. Okay, I'm just gonna say this, we can cut it out later, but several people have heard me say this over the years, probably the last three years. And the joke was always, when they write the epitaph on the tombstone of Rooster Teeth, it will say this, and I've always thought this, resources mismanaged.
Loving father, comma, will be missed.
I think that that's probably, you know, I'll just air my grievances right here. That is my biggest regret, That was the worst thing to see, is like see awesome ideas never come to fruition because resources were catastrophically mismanaged.
I mean, yeah.
And I don't think that's telling tales out of school either. I think like you go to everyone, to a person at this company and be like, do you think the right stuff is being put at the right places? I think everyone would say.
There was a time where there were so many Topo Chicos being consumed on the campus that I do believe it took a year off of this company's life.
We were probably Tyler's going through nodding. Like 60 cases a week.
I think at one point they said it was something like 20 cases, like 20 to 40 cases a month.
That makes sense.
Like a case.
Because I could fucking slam 7 Topo Chicos in a day.
It gets so hot and people just grab them, dude.
Oh, yeah. People like quad fist them, like grab two bottles in a hand and like walk back to their office.
I'm sure they're good as fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the saddest part of all of it, right? Is that like anytime you have a company, the way to stay in control is to be the leanest company you can possibly be.
No, it's true.
There was also a time where I feel like not just this industry, but all industries were really trying to be Google.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With like the cool campus that you're like, you work at.
Lunch. We got free lunch on Mondays.
Yeah,
man, which feels like a life. I mean, doesn't like a different, feel like a life. Feels like a different company.
It was because it was pandemic.
Well, yeah, and
it was full screen.
Yeah,
I can't. I'm going back in time. Yeah. Get me on lunches.
some fucking real zero interest rate behavior.
Oh, that's some real angel VC fund behavior.
Yeah, that's real. Yeah. Funny money, man. Just absolute funny money.
It's one of the craziest things is because, well,
There's so many Razor scooters.
The reason that Google had a campus like that was so that their employees wouldn't feel bad for being there all the
22
time.
22 hours in a single day.
Okay.
Can I tell you one of my favorite moments working here ever? And I think you all know what it is. Well, you three, or sure. Us three.
Sure.
There was a period of time where we thought we would be getting an insane budget to make a scripted narrative show. And there was a moment where our job was to put together a bunch of pitches for these shows. And it was at the peak of us spending thousands of dollars on consultants. And so Andrew wrote a script for a show called Consultant about a group of business people who couldn't hack it in the business industry. So they became consultants and scammed people out of money. And I remember you pitched it and me, you and Drew were just fucking like, we're gonna get in so much trouble for this. And I remember the executive team being like, that's really good. This is a good idea. That's a really, really strong idea. Let's put that in the green light pile. And it was just like, the fuck is going on? They like consultants so much they approved a show about it.
They approved a show about what a grift it is. God damn, we should just be consultants.
Should we be consultants?
We should be consultants. It's the best job in the world. You get to come into a company with obvious problems, tell them those obvious problems back to them for thousands of dollars, and then sometimes millions, and then you leave, and you don't have to
and
answer.
And if the company fails, you still get to keep the money.
Of course, yeah. The money's, the check cleared. It's the greatest grift on all time.
It's one of these things where, like, I feel, well, okay. As a stand-up comedian, I've seen a lot of terrible stand-up comedians teach stand-up classes.
Yeah.
And then when I saw what consultants were, I was like, that's just stand-up class. Yeah. That's all that is. You're not good at what you did, otherwise you'd have a business. Why is your business telling businesses how to business? I think we could do it.
It's literally like you're on like Instagram and you're just going through reels and you get one that's just like a man talking to a fucking camera. And then you click on, and it's like, go to my bio, go to the bio, you buy a course to tell you what you already know.
Yeah.
That's just like the influencer version.
Oh, yeah.
Consultants, yeah.
This feels like a deeper.
Consultants have existed since the time of cavemen. Before there was men that would go out there with club and hit tiger and bring back for family. Mm. But there was other cavemen go, tiger not enough, need fulfillment here.
And then there was another person who go, listen, for about 15% of that tiger, I could tell you that tiger has stripes. And people would go, well, that makes a lot of sense. Then a boardroom of people, that makes a lot of sense. We should give him 15% of this tiger.
A tell cave room another guy. Full of people.
Yeah. A cave room?
A
God
cave
damn,
room full of
very
people.
Good.
But then there's just one guy in a cave who pays you $25 every time you tell people that he sells tigers. So.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear that we hired Chuga? He worked with that other cave that invented fire. That shit was insane. Yeah.
Shit was fire.
That shit was fire.
That's what.
Fuck up. Oh my God!
No,
all of it.
No, all of it.
Cut the whole thing. The whole thing.
Yeah. Keep it in.
Keep it in.
Keep
this
it in.
This one's for Daddy.
What are they gonna do? Chuga us?
That's very good.
I'm still mad about it. I'm like re-mad about it. I had forgotten about all the consultancy bullshit that went around, and it was just like, at a time when it was like, you know, we need audience. We need like new audience. We're looking for like, you know, different. Oh God. And also the business talk just like chills me to the fucking bone. There's nothing worse.
I, on the other hand, like business talk.
I like business talk.
I like,
I would talk about revenue streams.
Revenue stream. Yeah. I got your revenue stream right here.
I will say the phrase KPI does make me murderous.
Yeah.
Top of funnel.
Oh. Top of funnel makes me want to die. KPI stands for kill people intensely. And yeah.
The top of funnel KPI. Here's the problem, and it's I've said this. This is my like rant session. I'm usually like, so I feel like all the time on this podcast, I'm pretty subdued, but I'm just like very keyed up right now. Okay. Another thing that like I really, really hate that has happened. What's going on now?
Nothing. Keep going.
Okay. Something that I hate about like this industry and the fact that we're all called content creators is like the worst thing on earth. The term content is a marketing term that infiltrated the world of artists, and it is one of the worst things to come about in my entire life. And in the entire life we're gonna, you're not a content creator. You're not a content creator.
No.
You are an editor, you're a writer, you're a director, you're a
comedian,
you're a graphic artist. Like, these are discrete talents and skills that you have that have been flattened into the term content creator to pay us all less. Yeah. That is exactly why that thing was
invented. And fewer of us.
And fewer of us.
Less?
And turn it into a,
into a slurry. But that's how you get it. A slurry.
No, we heard you.
No, we heard you.
Turn into
it
a slur.
It was funny. It was funny.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about content creator, the term is that it's such not an actual job that like, okay, to specify, I think that people who create content, it is a job, all right? People who make podcasts, people who do the stuff that we're doing, that is a job. I agree with you. The term content creation is so stupid. And my favorite part of it was trying to explain to my father what content creation was. A man who worked as a mechanic for years and now works as a lawnmower? I think.
And not mowing lawns. He is the
mower.
They hold his feet up and he goes, nom.
If you ever see, it's like a dinosaur in Flintstones.
Yeah.
The way they would like turn them into like machines.
And his gas tank is filled with Bud Light.
It's a living.
So, I tried to explain to my father what I do. And I was like, well, yeah, I do like, I work for a content creation company. And he was like, what does that mean? And I was like, well, we make stuff. And he was like, everything makes stuff, dumbass. Like, yeah, you could work for a company and they make cars. That's not content. And I was like, okay, yeah, but like if I took a camera and made a video about the car, that's content. And he just went, why would anyone pay you for that? And that's when I went, oh shit, I gotta get into a new industry.
Yeah.
Fuck. Oh no.
When
I'm
someone
ruined.
Held the cold mirror of simple facts up to you, you're like, oh yeah.
Well, since this is the final episode of the show, I thought it would be really good to ask each of you about your favorite moment working here, or your favorite moment from a show or something that we worked on. And I know that as a blanket statement, the three of us, our favorite moments were probably working on this show. Like, obviously, one of the most fun I've ever had was when we made poop shoes. Poop shoes was one of I don't even think it was our funniest sketch, but it was definitely like the funnest to shoot. I remember every take, everyone just breaking fully. So like, yeah, you can there's so many lines to make no sense. My favorite moment is that one of the improvised lines came from Barbara. She goes, I hope you walk into traffic and fucking die.
Yeah, because we were doing it, you were like, can you do one disgusted? Okay, can you do one like shocked and horrified? Okay, now let's do like a mean one. And she just like,
she goes, I hope you walk into traffic and fucking die. And I think I still have the clip because like I'm outside of the room and you can hear me lose it. So there's so many great memories, and you are more than welcome to pick one from that. But my favorite thing that I've ever done while working here, and it's the closest I ever got to making that show Scam Likely that I've wanted to make for forever, but we were filming a show called Trucked Up with Drew Saplin as the director. That was my first time ever working with Drew, and I was I had a bit in my mind where we were supposed to be making orange chicken, and I am bad at making chicken. Several times I've given myself food poisoning from not cooking the chicken enough. And so what I decided to do was leave and go to a Panda Express and buy Panda Express and bring it back and try to pass it off as my own. Mm-hmm. My favorite part of this was that most people did not know what I was doing. And the adventure of me going there, a little bit of it is scripted in that like we couldn't hire an Uber driver and then just have like a camera in the Uber. So we had like a production assistant take me over there. But yeah, that was one of my favorite moments, and then getting to work as a story producer and like put that together was just like, that was the first time I ever felt like I was doing something crazy and cool
and fun,
fucking with the rules. It felt like I was on Taskmaster. Like it just was fun. And so that show was one of the most fun I've ever had working here. That's one of my favorite memories. What is yours?
Yeah, I'm like, you know, because I've been here for a little bit longer. You know, I came on around like the Laser Team 2 time, and we like were also making like, you know, had designs on making TV shows here, like sitcoms and stuff. So I was writing on that, and then I became head writer for RT Core. So it is kind of crazy. Like we made a sketch, like a pretty well produced sketch every week in Core. Like they looked really, really good. And that was a lot of fun because that was like being in production and doing like writing sketches and producing sketches, which I've done for years. And that was a lot of fun. But I think, and I'm kind of reiterating, like a single favorite moment, I think, was probably, I'm going to be honest, this is going to sound so tame. It's not even on a production. I think being just in our office and thinking of these ideas, like around a table and like having our like little writers' rooms and stuff like that, I can't even pick one. But I know on many occasions, like head in hands weeping at like the funniest thing I can possibly think of. Like too many times in that room, just beside ourselves with laughter. And I think like, I can't even choose like a time. And I can't even remember the jokes. I just remember being inconsolably happy and like crying to tears in our writer's room.
This was our writer's room?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I didn't, for a second I thought you meant RT Core's writer's room. I was I swear to God, I was looking at a Slack for 5 seconds and I missed something. And I was like, what a piece of shit.
No.
I was bringing up some other writer's room. Like, yeah, you know what my favorite part of a relationship was? When I had sex with another lady. Fuck off, asshole. No, yeah, that was, I remember us laughing at James Bond saying, "What?" I can't even remember what it was. It was like,
no time to come.
I don't even remember the context for the joke.
It was shaken, not stirred.
As I'm, for audio listeners, I'm jerking myself off and saying not stirred, like I'm fingering my
beehole.
Cool.
Male G-spot, which stands for gangster spot. Mm. So there were so many moments in there that like, also the worst part was we would hit on something that was so funny and we would go, well, we're never gonna remember how to get there naturally. This joke is done. Stop fucking talking. We'll talk about it on the podcast.
Yeah, oh man, yeah. That was a heavy feature of just like, stop everything. Save it. Put that away. We need to talk about it on the show.
You're just hanging out at the food truck and being like, no,
save it.
Which is like, you know, the great part about doing the show and feature, is that like we could have like normal fun hangout conversations and also be like, no, save that. Let's talk about it on the show. Like, put it in like a notes app, and then just like, all right, what's next? And then we just like roll right into another thing. I just like that was incredibly, incredibly cool. I'm not on Twitter anymore. Occasionally I still get I don't go on the app anymore, but occasionally I get notifications, and someone commented yesterday that our chemistry is insane. And you know what? I have to agree.
It's because we make out before every episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
It's hard, too.
Yeah, just do a three-way.
Oh, yeah, it's also difficult.
Because I have to lower my body down, and Griff has to get on a step stool. Yeah.
Which I've been down for. I get down on all fours where I like to be. And
Griff, what was your favorite moment or moments?
Does it have, specifically this team?
No.
I've been on so many teams.
Just with Rooster Teeth in general.
I
mean,
I feel like with you guys, again, it's every frame of portrait, every day a dream working with you guys. It's hard to choose.
You say every day a drink?
A dream?
Oh, okay. Well,
depends on what your dream is. And then, of course, there's I spent so much time with STF. We did the TikTok. We did so much D&D stuff. I got to do my first piece of original content with them. I got into streaming with them. So that was all very pivotal. But I think the most impactful moment I've ever had working at this company was my first RTX here, because I was on the sales team. And we, sold all the activations on the floor, and I would have to go and take pictures of people having fun at the Mortal Kombat Xbox booth or whatever, or watch the Doom fight on the main stage. But just going around RTX that year and taking the pictures and seeing that you can do marketing that makes people happy.
Yeah.
And seeing people go to a thing and be like, whoa, I got to play Injustice with Barbara Dunkelman, who I've been a fan of since I was a little kid. And I'm just like, oh, I use capitalism to do that. To actually make someone happy and bring them joy. And that I think that's my favorite memories I've had. Since I've been here.
I will say that every time we got to do RTX was the wildest experience of my life, mostly because one, every person who knows who you are is together in one city. And so sometimes you'll just be walking down the street and somebody will be like, that's Armando Torres. And it's like, wow, that feels cool. Normally it's only the cops doing that. And no, but it the idea that people are so excited to just get to meet you. Mm. And I don't know, I remember every single time I went to RTX the first couple of times, because I only got to go to three of them, two or three of them, I think. Mm. Every time I went to one, somebody would be like, thanks for taking the time. And it's like, what are you talking about? It's thanks, you're the reason I get to do anything.
I'm in this room right now.
I don't get to do anything without you. And I don't know. The fans are so just, man, damn, I didn't think I was going to get emotional. It's, we don't get to do any of this without you, and you guys are really great. And you guys are super sick. I wish I had better words to say it. It's just the fact that we make these goofy, stupid things, and we've said it a million times, we make this stuff just for us. I don't care what anyone else thinks of it. I just want to make it for me to make good stuff, and I don't care what anyone thinks. And then somebody comes up to me and goes, I loved it. I loved every part of it, and that thing that you made resonated with me so much, and I loved watching it, and I love watching you hang out with your friends and have your dumb little conversations, because I agree with your conversations, and it's great. And that is just a beautiful, stupid little thing.
No, I think that's, not to get too heavy, or
If you do get too heavy, I will punish you.
Okay. Or to psychoanalyze it too much, but I think one of the great things about working here and working with some of the creative people here is that I think is again artists. Ugh, I think anyone who wants to make anything, and again who just the fact that we turned this just for daddy, things that we wanted to make just for you, because it was a compulsion to see something brought into the world to express yourself is putting a piece of you out into the universe. Like, it's externalizing this thing. It's making something that, like, you put a piece of yourself into and a part of, like, your personality and your point of view and your perspective into it. And because I think, at least for myself as a creative, I have to do that. I don't know how to do anything else. Like,
yeah.
That's just something I'll do for the rest of my days. No matter whether it's at a company or painting alone in my house, something will always be being made. And so when fans say, or not just like something, but like, there are like obsessive Rooster Teeth fans, just ravenous fans of Rooster Teeth. When people, when you have fans or people who are fans and support your work, they can love you, but then they get to love this thing that's also a part of you, that's an extension of your point of view, and maybe even distalizes your point of view into a more like concrete thing. And while they can't know like you as like, maybe not know you intimately as a person and be like your friend and sit down with you in a way, they get to know this the more inner life of Armando de Torres, because they get to see the show that you wrote. And I think that's one of the like best things about the human experience and about being creative. Ah, sorry.
That was your punishment for being too sweet.
Anyway.
Yeah. Listen, dorks, you've been along with us for the ride thus far, and man, it's been good. And now it's come to a big old end, and
I do want to do something before the show ends, actually. Can we get everybody who's worked on the show out here?
Like, please.
Like, anybody who can come over here, be over here with us?
Yeah, get on over here. Get on, come on in. Come on. Yeah, leave it on the wide, Fisher. Get out here.
Come on, Diamond. Gary.
Come on, get in here. Look at this team.
So this is good audio content.
Yeah.
Describe what you're seeing.
If you're listening at home, what you're seeing is the Last Supper. Cameron is Jesus.
I'm Judas. All right.
Get in here, Braylon.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is everyone who's worked on the show. I mean, obviously, there's more people.
There's more people. Now everyone can make it today. You know?
Yeah, but this is just an incredible crew full of people that helped us make this stupid, dumb thing, and I love it so much. And right off camera, there's a man with a gun, and we're about to be shot. So, oh fuck! Fuck! All right, I think for one last time, we've been the Rooster Teeth podcast. So,
we love you.
Bye.
We'll see you later.
See you next week. Ow.
So you guys got laid off too?